This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Mental illness comes in many forms, from depression to bipolar disorder and anxiety to schizophrenia. While many are getting help, thousands of others may not even realize they have a diagnosable condition. Today, we're going to talk about mental illness and the help available in Greater Cincinnati. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can call us at 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. On Facebook, we're 91.7 WVXU. Twitter, at 91.7 WVXU, and our Twitter handle, hashtag WVXU Talk. Later in the hour, tips and recipes to liven up your 4th of July menu. But first, joining me are President and CEO of the Lindner Center of Hope, Dr. Paul Keck, Jr. He's also the Executive Vice Chairman of the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Department of Psychiatry. President and CEO of North Key Community Care in Covington, Dr. Owen Nichols, and psychiatrist and chief medical officer at Greater Cincinnati Behavioral Health Services, Dr. Tracy Scale. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Certainly glad to have you all here. I think a really good place to start with the topic today is to just define what mental illness is. I think a lot of people have a lot of varied ideas about what mental illness is. Maybe you can start out telling us your definition. Dr. Keck, you want to start?
I'm glad that was your first question, because I think as a society, we're vulnerable to lumping things together that don't belong lumped together. There are many, for example, skin diseases ranging in severity and dangerousness, from acne to skin cancer. Mental illness really is a term that defines a whole bunch of different problems that affect our memory, our thoughts, our perceptions of reality, our mood. But they're very different in diagnoses. They're very different in brain structures that are involved, and the treatment approaches to different illnesses also vary substantially. So one of the very first things that's incumbent upon us as practitioners in the mental health care system is to sort out what specific mental health problem a person might be having. And that takes time and a very thorough interview, and often talking to family and friends, and then embarking on a treatment path that is designed to get them well. And the good news is there are a lot of good treatments that get people well now.
Dr. Scale?
And I would add to that that these are real illnesses, and these are neurobiological illnesses. The organ of choice that's affected here is your brain, as opposed to your kidney or your heart or your liver. So that helps to destigmatize these illnesses. One of the things we can help define is to say what these illnesses are not. And what they are not is weaknesses of character. They're true illnesses that require true treatment by a physician and a team, and sometimes medications. And it's not one of these pull yourself up by the bootstraps kind of situations.
Dr. Nichols?
When you look at mental illness, you have to take into consideration what kind of impact it's having on the person's life. And usually we find that there are three areas that you can find it. Usually if their symptoms are significant enough, it'll be interfering with their work performance, maybe interfering with their school performance, and it may be interfering with their family life, their relationships that they have with other people. So often people think that if someone says that they're anxious or feel sad or whatever, that may be in and of itself a sign of a mental illness. It's not. All of us have those emotional reactions and experiences and so forth. It all depends on the degree that it interferes with the person's functioning into things basically that all of us have in our own lives.
Now, how do you begin to define that? How do you begin to decide, gosh, this is a serious enough problem that maybe I need to get some help?
I mean, it depends on the individual. I think, if, as you were saying, Owen, if it's starting to adversely interfere with your life, all of a sudden your schoolwork is affected, your job is affected, your relationships are affected, that might be the time to seek treatment. Or maybe in a case of depression, you're so forlorn, or you're thinking, you know, you have nothing brings you joy anymore, low energy, and maybe you're even having thoughts of death. Definitely, probably beyond time to be looking for help.
And I think another thing that you get into, for example, with depression, if you're looking at, is it interfering with the person's ability to do their job? The studies show that someone that's experiencing a major depressive episode loses about 6 hours of productivity at work every week. So you and I, you know, we may lose an hour, we may lose an hour and a half, you know, by whatever we're going through our minds that we're thinking about and so forth. But somebody that's depressed, it really is interfering. They're losing nearly a day's work out of every week because they're not as functional. They're not able to concentrate on the task at hand. They're not able to maybe remember or recall the things that they need to be doing or the steps and so forth. So you ask questions, as Paul was saying, you go through a detailed diagnostic interview to ask those questions to see, is this having any real impact on your functioning?
And it's not as subjective as people might mm-hmm. think. And in fact, that's one of the myths of the accuracy or validity of psychiatric diagnoses. Five most common causes of disability worldwide, five of the ten most common causes are psychiatric disorders: depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, obsessive compulsive disorder, and addictions. Those are very, very different illnesses. They present differently, they have different symptoms, they have different treatments and different outcomes. What we do when someone comes in for an evaluation is systematically ask questions about depression. There are certain diagnostic criteria, certain key characteristics. It's not just a disorder of mood, for example, but people who are depressed have disturbances in their sleep, their appetite, their concentration, their energy, things that affect their overall functioning. So the reliability of these diagnoses are very, very good. And I think the problem isn't so much that people come in and don't know something's wrong and don't know what. The problem that we face as a society is that people don't come in despite the fact that they know there's a problem. And it's often not until these problems go on untreated for months or even years that they finally get help. Like every illness in medicine, the earlier someone gets help, usually the better their ultimate outcome and prognosis.
Now, you said something that I thought many people may not be aware of. You mentioned addictions. Addictions are a mental illness? I mean, some people wouldn't say that. They view that differently.
Well, I'll jump in, but see what these guys say. Historically, they have not been conceptualized as mental illnesses. And I think that's literally an anachronism. It goes back to notions that alcoholism and drug abuse were illnesses that were behaviors that were due to weak will. We know that the genetic vulnerability to addictions is very, very substantial. We know that it's the same organ that affects other, or is involved in other mental illnesses, as Tracy said. We know the pathways involved in addiction. In Ohio, finally, just this past year, the two agencies that were in charge of mental illness and addictions, respectively, have merged. So I think symbolically, government agencies are finally catching up to the science in the recognition that addictions are a form of mental illness.
And so many times you find them co-occurring. So just as Paul mentioned, the pathways are very similar for a number of mental illnesses along with the addiction. So there are the same areas of the brain being impacted. There are same neurotransmitters that are being impacted. So, you know, you produce one symptom and you call it an addiction. You produce another symptom, you call it depression. You produce another symptom, you call it psychosis. All of these regions of the brain that are impacted are relatively related to one another, and it's really gets down to the severity of the problems that the person is experiencing and how much is it interfering with their functioning.
And we have many people who are dually diagnosed, meaning so they have bipolar disorder and they have alcohol dependence. It makes things much more difficult to treat. I mean, and usually the substances exacerbate the mental illness. But we do treat simultaneously. There's some places that will say, well, until you're sober, we're not going to take care of you. But we learned that that's not the way to go. And by the way, we wouldn't be treating a whole bunch of our almost 5,000 patients that we have if we stuck to that kind of model. Also, treating the underlying neurobiological illness, oftentimes people find that they don't need the substance as much because sometimes they're doing a term that's thrown around, self-medicate, but there's something to that. They're trying to bring themselves down, bring themselves up with the drugs.
The unfortunate part is that we don't do that with the physical health side. For example, in looking at depression, physical pain is often a symptom of depression. So people will typically, about 50% of primary care visits are related to some underlying mental health issue. So after all the tests and so forth have ruled out all of the physical problems, then you come around to, oh, this may be a psychological problem. Well, we don't categorize that as unique or special because we ruled out all of the physical problems. So why would we do that with an addiction?
One of the things that you've all mentioned in one way or another is bipolar disorder. And it's one of those, is disease the right word to call it? One of those diseases that I think we're hearing more and more about today. Can you define what that is and why perhaps we're hearing more about it now?
Well, on this one, I think we should defer to Dr. Keck, who's a internationally known bipolar expert, and I'll take the schizophrenia part when we go on there.
Well, thank you, Tracy. We do know a lot about bipolar disorder. It's been the target of a lot of scientific research, especially over the last 20 to 25 years. We know that it is one of the most heritable of all medical illnesses. Notice I said medical, not just psychiatric. So the genetics of this illness are profound. Secondly, it's an illness that is very reliably diagnosable. People with bipolar disorder have depression, often as severe and potentially lethal as people with major depressive disorder or clinical depression. But the difference in their illness compared with someone with depression is that they have manic symptoms. And those manic symptoms often lead to behaviors and problems that are dangerous to themselves and to others. People who are manic don't need to sleep. Their minds race. They talk very quickly. They're often grandiose, euphoric, sometimes very irritable, and sometimes violent. We know this is a recurrent illness for many, many people. And so one of the foundations of treating someone, helping them get well and stay well, is with mood stabilizing medicines. And fortunately, in the last, since 1994, there are about a dozen different new medicines that have been developed as mood stabilizing medicines. There's a lot of hope now where there really wasn't much before for people with this problem.
We're going to talk more about all of these diseases that fall into mental illness, at least many of them, sort of as our overview discussion today. We're talking about mental illness in general and options for treatment in Greater Cincinnati. We'd love to hear from you, too. You can join the conversation on Cincinnati Edition on our inaugural week here of the program by calling 513-419-7100. You can email us, talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll continue our discussion after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.